the plan, such as it is that we're going to finish Ahava, right? The one on Ahava that's Melhav Tel Riacha Kamocha, and then we'll start talking about Purim. And as a shame, since we have a little more time before Purim than before Pesach, we might move into topics that also are Purim that then help go into Pesach, but we'll see how far we get. Okay, so we're on page 53 of Chorev, which is paragraph 123, essay 16, Love, Ahava. But of course, there are two ones called Love, Ahava, one that's Ahavas Hashem and one that's Ahavas Yisrael. But maybe one thing that became clear over here is there's not such a big distinction. And maybe that's why he gave them the same name. I don't know. The Torah does give them the same name. I mean, where's the word ve'ohavta show up? Ve'ohavta l'riacha kamocha, and ve'ohavta es Hashem l'kecha. It's not, yeah, that's not a coincidence. So over here also, like, I think that's a little bit, he took that theme to try and show you, because where did we end? We said the first step of loving other people is to realize that they're not your rivals in the world. They're not taking away from you. They're not encroaching on what's coming to you. Hashem gives them what they need in it. He says, that's not love. That's just not hate. We start with not hate. Work our way towards love. The next step was seeing the other person as indispensable to your existence and welfare and your mission. How are they indispensable? Because what would you do without them? Right? You'd be lonely. You would have no society. And worst of all, you would have no way to fulfill yourself. So it's selfish in a sense, right? You know, people will say, oh, well, isn't it selfish if I give charity to the person who's very down because I make myself feel better. I felt so bad when I saw him, I make myself feel better. So to the extent that that's true, that that's the motivation, I could believe it could be in some cases, right? Certainly, you know, the parent who gives the kid a cookie because they just feel so sad that they're crying and no consideration for what the need is of the child. So it could be it's selfish, that you could give selfishly. It's not maybe the most terrible thing. Still could be giving, but it's not the loftiest either. So there could be the feeling that other people, here I am, I'm created to be a blessing, and there would be no one to be a, give blessing to. That would actually be pretty horrible. I just came from a Levaya. And at the Levaya, I saw someone I know who, her sister passed away very young and left four children. She's single, this woman. And she's raising these four nieces. So I think she's got one's a senior in high school, one's an eighth grader, one just started in university, and one is maybe already farther along. I don't know, something like that. She's pretty frum. She's Balas Tshuva. The children were not being raised frum at all. So she kind of like, you know, she's like sending them to Jewish schools. It's like sort of a process, you know. But it sounds like she's doing an amazing job. And she said to me, you know, it is hard, but it's given me such purpose. It's exactly it. Like, life is so much more precious that she has these four children to take care of. She was telling me the whole last week they had the flu, and she was with the Vicks VapoRub and the chicken soup and the Robitussin. She said it was wonderful. It was such a cute thing to say. Like, you don't usually hear mom say that. Oh, my kids are home. Oh, they usually say, oh, it's Baruch Hashem, they're all back in school. Like, she didn't say that. So they were home all week last week, and it was wonderful. She said, so fun. She said, maybe that doesn't sound good. I don't mean it was fun that they had the flu, but it's so, she's still savoring. What is it now? I don't know. It's 5 or 6 years later. She's really savoring being able to give to them. She doesn't have her own family, her own children to take care of. This is her family now. Okay. And furthermore, you could see that you need to have other people around because, sort of like what I told you, Rosh Hashanah time, like being part of the klal gives you more strength. You have people you learn from. You have people whose merits become part of yours, and you're part of a tzibur, or a tefillah, or a minyan. You have the immortality that comes with being part of a community. That the contributions you make to the klal itself does not die. So no matter how long or short a person lives, the contribution you make into it, even if that itself finishes, but you now are part, you've contributed to the birth of and the running of this living organism of the klal, of klal Yisrael, and that does not die, and that keeps going. And then we ended with, Hashem says, Hashem has called all of these beings to life. And just like he called you to life with love, he called that other crazy person to life with love who's always stealing your parking spot, right? Like, he also made them come to life with love. So maybe you could remember that to the extent that you love Hashem, love his children. And that's also a reason to love them. Okay, so this we're up to now. Finally suggests, now we're getting to a higher level, which means maybe you don't get there all in one fell swoop, but this is where we head when we're trying to work on Avos Yisrael, is toward this direction. Finally, says Hashem, I am the Lord, the personification of love, who has chosen man to be the instrument of this love. Okay, so I think that sentence is oddly, I don't know that, it's definitely not for me to judge how well it's translated. Diane Grunfeld was not only a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but also a much better master of the English language than I. A German also being his first language, and English being a second language that he knew much better than I do. So I don't mean that. I just mean that maybe the way I read it comes out sounding wrong. Like, what does it mean Hashem's a personification? Hashem's not personification of anything. Ein lo demus haguf, ein lo guf, right? There's no person going on here, no. But the pasuk was, ve'ohavtol ariyacha kamocha ani Hashem. And the name of Hashem there is Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey. That is a name associated with Ahava. Remember we said that a shame, in particular if we're talking about Hashem, a shame refers to the spiritual essence of something. And when it's a name of Hashem, what it's referring to is how we observe him to be relating to us. So in the context of Ve'ahavtol ariyacha kamocha, what is the shame? I believe that that's the personification. What's meant there by personification? Not that Hashem, but what is the name that is going on Hashem over here that he's telling us is the aspect of his relationship to us to which we should pay attention? It's love. That's the name that's connected to loving other people. Yeah? Okay. Who has chosen, so that means that what that in that pasuk, Hashem is telling us, I want you, when you are thinking about loving other people, to notice that I am Hashem who behaves with love to you. And specifically, who has chosen man to be the instrument of this love. So something about the fact that Hashem is described as Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey in that pasuk is to remind us that Hashem Hashem chose human beings as the tool, the instrument, the kli, the fork, right? The extension of Hashem's will into the world for delivering love. That's that mission of chesed, right? What did he say? If you want to see a person with the most divine essence shining out of him, look at him while he's doing chesed. Okay, so that's this reference. Do you, man, not see how this love is the finest flower of this mission? That if you truly could find inside yourself love for any specific other person, we said there was that one exception that was mentioned at the end of the Sinah, right? If you could do that, then that would be the finest flower of your mission. It would be like your neshama was sent into the container of this body, because the container of this body is like, it's like the spacesuit. An astronaut, Revolvi gives a mashal of this. I'm not going to give his mashal there. We'll save it for a more apropos moment. Okay, but the astronaut wants to go out into space, outside the spaceship, and he's going to repair this antenna, let's say, right? Or a telescope. There's one problem. You can't put a human being into outer space or inner space. Like, you can't do that in orbit. Why? Because his body is not equipped to deal with no air, right? The blood will boil inside all his veins and arteries at once, and he'll die before he ever runs out of breath. So you could pack him in a spacesuit. The spacesuit could interface with this environment. The spacesuit is klutzy, is not perfect. It can't do the job. It's not a drone. It can't do the job, but it can be a very good container for the astronaut. Because the astronaut can give the directions and make the choices and move the suit. And the suit is equipped to, like, extend and mirror the choices and actions that are initiated by the astronaut so that the job gets done. The neshama is sent into the goof. It's a spacesuit. Heard Rabbi Lef say it. I saw it in also Revolvi. It's a spacesuit. Okay? Another example where you see it is if you ever went into the neonatal ICU and there's the babies in the incubators. So they're very fragile, but also they need to have their oxygen in there. So if you want to touch them, also they're very sensitive to germs sometimes. So they have gloves that are built into little holes, like portholes in the side. And you could stick your hands straight into the gloves and you can pat the baby and they could give it medicine and they could whatever without exposing it, right, to all kinds of other things. Yeah? So it's not the gloves that are not doing it, right? It's the hands inside the gloves. But the hands, it's not a good idea to put the hands into the incubator. So this is another example of like a spacesuit, right, that allows you to sort of to act in a different environment that's not suited directly for action from you. Okay? So here is your neshama. It was sent on a mission. The mission is to be a tzelem elokim, a dmus in this world, ba'el yonim. Presence of Hashem being demonstrated, batachtonim, below. Don't you see how love is the finest flower of this mission? How do you raise yourself above the stone and the plant and the animal? There's a lot of things in this world, and they're all here to give kavod to Hashem. So what makes you think you're any better? Is it not through devoting yourself of your own free will, because that is how you're different, to the welfare of the world around you? This is just what love effects. This is what love causes. Okay? So remember we talked about emotion being the motor of our actions? You remember that? We said like there's you can have in the car, you have the steering wheel and the engine. Okay? Your brain is your steering wheel. Your heart is your engine. It's very important not to drive without using the steering wheel. But even if you're only using the steering wheel, you don't actually go anywhere, right? If you don't turn the engine on, you're not actually going anywhere, right? That's a whole thing of Harev was about trying to activate both parts together so that you could accomplish. Then you get to the deeds, that's the hands, right? So this is what love affects. If you're raising yourself above the stone and plant and animal, the domim sameach and chai, is through devoting yourself of your own free will to the welfare of the world around you, that's what the love will let you do. Right? If you look at the person, you say, well, it's really Hashem's child. Like inside, you're cringing. You can't stand them. And you just keep trying to tell yourself with your brain, like, but it's Hashem's child. So like you could get by a little bit with the brain, but you're not really going to be able to achieve a lot in terms of devoting yourself to that person's welfare when you really don't care about them. It will help if you care about Hashem, but it doesn't take you all the way. Okay? So what makes this a higher level is you've gone from saying, well, I'm trying to realize that you're really important to me as me, myself, this human being. The next level was, I'm trying to realize that you're important to Hashem. And since I love him, whatever's important to him is important to me, and you're important to him, therefore you're important to me. Okay? Now, if Hashem didn't think you were important to him, I would drop you in a second. But you're important to him, therefore you're important to me, and that's not bad. But the higher level is, whatever is Hashem's will is my will. And this is what I'm trying to achieve. So because you're important to him, you're actually important to me. Meaning, whatever is important to Hashem is actually important to me, even if I don't see that it's important to him, just because it's important to him. Not because it makes him happy, but because whatever is Hashem's will has become fully my will. I'm like expressing all the Tzelem Elohim of myself instead of all the other parts. So the first one was just selfish. The second part was, I'll give you an example. I heard Robert Orlick say this. He tells us to chasanim. He says to a chasin, let's say you were going to have curtains. What color should they be? And I don't know, whatever. Okay, white, blue? I don't know. So he says, you should know that your kala is going to have an opinion. And not only is she going to care what color they are, but if they're white, there's like 49 shades of white. There's eggshell, and there's ecru, and there's, you know, ivory, and there's, I don't know, whatever, like white, and Mont Blanc white, and whatever. And not only is she going to care, but she's going to ask you, could you come with her to the curtain store to look at them? So this is when the question, do you say, but I don't care, honey, whatever you want is fine with me. Really what you say is, of course, I'll go with you. Because if it's important to you, it's important to me. So there's two levels of that, right? That, by the way, that's his dad. He says, love means what's important to you is important to me. That's what the world looks at. Okay, so what does that mean, though? There's two levels. There's because I love you. If this is meaningful to you, then because of its effect on you, I care about you being happy. Now, I don't suddenly start caring about curtains. I still could not care less what curtains they are. But whatever I can do that will make it nicer for you, that's what I want. There's another level, which is because it's important to you, I care about the curtains. So if the man came to deliver them and you weren't home, I'm going to be like checking, like, let me just double check that this is the color that you really ordered, and that it's the border that you really ordered, and it's the kind of pleats on top that you really ordered, because I want to make sure that when you get home, like, not that you should be happy, but just because I know that you ordered them. Let's say something happened to that man's wife. I don't know. Okay? He's still going to care that the curtains should be the way she wanted them. Not because of the effect it has on her, but because of the love for her, right? You hear about that, people, somebody passes away in the family, now they don't want to change anything that person set up. Not saying if that's a healthy thing or not, it's a question. It can be, right? But it's a way of honoring the person. Saying, because this is how they wanted it, that's how I want it. I really want it that way. Myself, I want it that way. Because of what? Okay, that's this level now, that since this is the role model Hashem is showing us of Ani Hashem on this pasuk, then what we want to do is bring that out inside of ourselves so we could be a little mini me of that, right? A little mini model emulating that. This is what Hashem does. Mahu rachum afato rachum. Mahu chanun afato chanun. Yeah? Like, I'm doing it because it's what Hashem wants. I'm loving this person because Hashem loves them. But I'm really loving them now. For me, I am loving them because of that godliness, okay? In myself, not only in them, right? We've talked in the past about seeing the godliness in them, but there's also the godliness in me that's coming out here and feeling that. This is just what love affects. Your whole activity belongs to God's world. First then, you belong to it with the source of your activity. What's the source of your activity? With your heart. That's a much nicer way of saying that your emotions are your engine, right? Your heart is the source of your activity. It's not the activity itself. That's with your hands or your feet, right? But your heart is the source of the activity. That's where that push goes out, the impulse to make you act. Carry in it love for God's world. Carry in your heart love for God's world, above all for your fellow man. The first and worthiest recipient of your beneficent activity. Carry love in your heart. It is this which makes you a man and an Israelite. This love in you, if it is genuine, expresses itself in deeds. Remember we saw that in, was it Chayei Sarah, right? With Eliezer and Rivka, about chesed being love in action, love in deed. Okay, so this love in you, if it is genuine, expresses itself in deeds with which, to the best of your ability, you promote the progress of the world around you to that state of welfare in which your love requires that you should desire to behold it. We're going to come back to this a little bit when we're talking about Purim. We're going to see a Ramban who a little bit talks about this, okay? So that means if you love someone, you care that they should have the maximum good for themselves. They should make the best progress, the most accomplishments, be successful in a good way, in a way that's good and healthy for them in the big picture. So this would be true around the whole world. For the whole world, especially that environment's closest to you and moving outward. The rules that should guide you in the practice of this love, so that you should not do mischief under the mistaken impression that you're promoting welfare, okay? Because you could try to be well-intentioned and do chesed for someone and hurt them very badly. We've maybe had experiences like that ourselves, certainly heard about them, right? The person who talks to somebody else to try and help and finds out the person they talked to was exactly the wrong person to mention it to. Or they say something meaning to be encouraging, but it's actually upsetting. Or they bring a gift and the person thought nobody knew about the problem or the engagement, the good thing. Or right? Like sometimes you could try and do chesed and even with all the good intention, right? So what are the guidelines for the practice of love? Are revealed in the whole of the Torah. If you wish to do good for the world and the environment around you, then the Torah tells you what to do. The whole of the Torah. All of it. Because all of it has an effect on the world and the society around you, whether you know it or not. Whether it's an obvious thing like Bikur Cholim, right? Or whether it's a not obvious thing like not wearing a shatnez. What does that do? I don't know. But it does. It does. Okay? That's called Ve'ahavto l'reyacho kamocha ze klal gadol ator. In respect of your fellow men, so when it comes to actually the chesed, the love of other people, not just the whole world that Hashem created, what's the rule? The rule is love your neighbor as yourself, which consequently is a positive commandment, belongs to the mitzvos. So you can see chapter 91 for actual rules. What does the Torah actually tell you about how to do? This was just the emotional side of getting it. Okay, so without stopping to savor that, much as I would like to, let's turn to page 156 on Purim. Rina, I hope it's okay. I brought this. It's yours. It was exactly perfect what I was looking for. So it's nice and brushy. Okay. All right. So we're going to do this in a few sections. So today we're going to work on the first paragraph and hopefully really, really fast so that I could start talking about the topic of that paragraph. Its history is clear. It is given in detail in the book of Esther, Megillas Esther, in the testimony handed down to us of the two main characters, Mordechai and Esther. You may not ever have thought of Megillas Esther that way. Megillas Esther was written by Esther and Mordechai, and therefore it is their personal testimony of the things that went on, including things that other people didn't know about because they were not privy to all of the secret conversations that happened in the palace. We see foul malice, seeking to satisfy personal revenge. That's Haman. Seeking to gamble with the lives of so many thousands of victims. You love that? How he threw the Hepiel Poor in there, the gamble. Seeking to gamble with the lives of so many thousands of victims who are without help from the outside world. Seeking to conceal its selfish design artfully under the guise of concern for the state. This is not a personal vendetta, of course. I mean, this could be problematic. It might undermine the morale of his wife or something. So this is his issue. And in addition, to present the harmless detachment of Israel, am mifuzaru miforad, they don't mix in with everyone else, that doesn't hurt the state, as dangerous to the aims of the state. He says, you see, they don't see themselves as real Persians. They're not really loyal. They have dual loyalty. Can't trust them. They're not assimilated properly. We see it quite sure, it being the foul malice. Remember what he said at the end of Sinah about the person's wickedness being so much their own identity that now you hate them? Oh. We see it. He doesn't even, it's not even a person here. It's like Yamach Shemo, and he's not going to mention him. We see it quite sure of achieving its infamous plans against the helpless, against those whose only possession was a serious appraisal of their past life and a coming back to their God. I mean, they are truly helpless. There's not some other nation or United Nations or place that you could run away to because the Persian Empire was dominating everything for a really long way around on a couple continents, right? There's nobody who could compete with them, so who's going to come and, like, put pressure? And all the people in power, as far as anyone knows, is, like, pretty much subservient to Haman and bowing down to him. So there's no one to influence on the inside either. Against those in anxious suspense because of the terrifying day which threatened the destruction of them all, to God alone did they turn. Would he indeed avert the disaster? And with the willpower with which man has been endowed, so the will, the free will, they resorted to the only way open to them, earnest submission of their cause and prayer. But God, the unseen, how marvelous, that's the whole point. Haster, Aster, Ponai. Right, Hashem's name is not mentioned directly. You have the Hamelechs that don't say Achashverosh, means Samelech, the King of Kings, but not mentioned directly. So God, the unseen, had for a long time already prepared the cure for the wound. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makdim Refuah L'Makom. God knits human deeds and their issues with his wise design. Have you ever seen someone knit? Yeah. Everyone's looking at you, you knit?
No, my sister's doing a knitting project. She also knits.
A what project?
A knitting project.
That's cool.
Instead of math.
Yeah. That's really doubly cool. Well, yeah. Okay. So, then you probably know there was this whole thing recently. There were a whole series of studies that were put out about complex mathematics being represented visually in knitting.
Really?
This is not, yeah, this is a thing. That's not just,
okay, so
I
guess
that's actually not, yeah, that's not like, that's like a serious thing nowadays. I think it's probably Caltech or somebody. Yeah. It's like a real thing. So she should just know. It's truly mathematical. But the thing about knitting is that, like, things go in, things go out. You look at it this way, you look at it that. You can't necessarily tell what it is you're looking at until maybe the separate sections get stitched together or you flip it upside down, especially if you're doing patterns that involve, like, different colors coming in different times to make the whole pattern. All you see is the changes, maybe. You don't really see. Okay? God knits human deeds and their issues. Okay, look at this again. There's two aspects to a person. It's Maharal. There's the be'etzem, the inherent, and there's the ma'isa, the deeds that they choose to do. So you don't get to choose who you are or what you're like, but you do get to choose what you do with it. Okay? So when we love people, we love them for their be'etzem. We could also love their actions. But we want to make sure, especially with children, very, very important, the foundation has to be that they know that they're loved, and it's be'etzem. It's not only that we love them when they do something good. That causes grown-ups who are neurotic, because you feel like if you then are not perfect, you won't be loved. Okay? It's a big risk to praising children for things they can't control, like being smart, or tall, or pretty, or thin, or having lovely hair. It's very risky. A little bit, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with knowing that you have nice eyes or knowing that you have good teeth. It's okay, right? But what that would suggest is that if it weren't that way, right? Ahava hatluya badavar. Like, then if it weren't that way, then you wouldn't love them. That's very frightening. Then you grow up to be an adult and you have to, like, sort through that. Okay, or for cooking, right? You love your children just because they are who they are. You also could really love the choices they make, right? So you could praise them, say, that was so thoughtful or so kind or meaningful or sensitive, right? But so much effort. And that's worth praising, because the effort's everything, because you didn't choose the other parts. Okay, so that's it. When you want to praise a child, you want to praise them for the things they do have control over, not the things they don't. Because what are you supposed to do with praise when someone praises you for something you have no control over? I mean, you say thank you, it's polite, right? That happens all the time in the outside world. But if it's in your family, what are you supposed to do with it when you're praised for something you didn't have any credit for? Maybe the mom gets the credit. She gave you the genes. I don't know. Like, or what?
She also didn't have control.
Yeah, like, it's just very, you know, like, so that's a focus, okay? So the issues, here's this, Hashem knits human deeds. That's the part we do have control. Not always the results, but the choices of the deeds, right? And their issues. He's knitting it together. Issues means our circumstances, our situations, our genes, all the parts we don't choose. Those are the parts with which he nurtures us and pushes us to grow and develop. That's our life circumstances. He knits those together with his wise design. The ennui of the sleepless night of the king. The ennui is like the weak, lack of energy. Sleepless night of a king. The fleeting emotion of a moment in a kingly breast. And behold, averted is the blow from the helpless, from those whose only possession is God. The finely calculated flash of lightning, laden with destruction, is hurled back upon the head of him who released it. What's that?
Haman.
Yeah, that's Vinahafoh, who was turned around. Emerges from the danger, and Israel, defenseless Israel, summoned itself to defend its life, emerges from the danger which threatened it with darkness and destruction, emerges into light and gladness. Okay, so, I only have a few minutes, but we're going to start. First of all, it's amazing. Isn't that a beautiful phrase? The finely calculated flash of lightning laden with destruction. It's beautiful, and it's such a clear image. But it did niggle a little in my mind. Like, why? Lightning. And what's the finely calculated flash of lightning? I just didn't exactly understand it. Okay. So now what I'm going to take you is into the Maharal, which is the source, pretty clearly, of this statement. I mean, obviously the source is the Pasuk Vinahafoh Hu. But what this is about is, I think, explained in through the Maharal. So I brought some handouts. Because what kind of day would it be without handouts?
It
would be very paperless.
Paperless?
It would be a very paperless day. Okay, so we're going to do tough cookie cake. Tat cafe. All right, so first, for now, we're not going to have time to, like, explain it. But let's start by seeing this Maharal just straight, kind of straight through, like, shot of the Maharal, so to speak, if there were such a thing. So you see, it starts with V'yesh Mekashin. You see that? I made, like, a little bracket. It's on the left column at the top. The way this works, this is the Rabbi Hartman Machon Yerushalayim Maharal. So he actually has Megillas Esther in here, but it's very spread out by the comments. The top section is the Maharal's commentary, Or Chadash, Sefer Or Chadash. It's stapled that way, yeah. So it's not, yeah, it's where the, did I give you the wrong, oh, I gave, did I give you the wrong one? I'll just give you this one.
This is the,
oh, I opened to the wrong one. Never mind. No, I, hang on. I think this is the wrong order. I take it back. Pass them back. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Let's try again. That's why you couldn't find it. I gave you the wrong one of what I wanted to do.
Here.
This one. Okay. Apologies. Sorry. Next time, next session. I'll give it back. Okay. V'yesh Mekashin. There are those who ask. V'chi Esther lo haisa rotza limtzor nafsho alamo shahaisa misyari shetizchayiv miso lamelech. So what's he asking here? So this is why I brought the Megillah, because it has all the psukim much closer together. U'mordechai yada, let me go back a little. Pas shegen haksav, end of parakimel, lehinosein das v'chol medina u'medina golui l'chol ho'amim liyos asidim layom hazeh. They sent out the message of the decree that Achashverosh approved for Haman to send out against the Jews. Harotzim, the runners, yatsu dechufim b'dvar hamelech, v'hadas nitna b'shushan habira. So in Shushan they heard first, because they're right there. V'hamelech v'haman yashvu lishtos v'ha'ir shushan navocha. U'mordechai yada es kol asher na'aso v'yikra mordechai es v'gada v'yilbash sak v'ofer v'yetze b'soch ha'ir v'yizak z'aka gdola umara. V'yavo ad lifnei shar hamelech ki en lavo al shar hamelech b'lavosh sak. U'v'chom adinu medina, okay. And then they came to Esther, and they told her that Mordechai is sitting outside, and he doesn't want to take off the sak v'efer and change into normal clothes so that he could come in and talk to her directly. So she called Hasach and said, please bring him and find out from him what's going on. What is this about? And Hasach went out, and he went, and Mordechai told him everything that happened. And here's the information for Esther. And Hasach came and told Esther. And Esther said to Hasach and told him to go to talk to Mordechai, that everyone knows that you that you can't go in. He says, Mordechai says, Letzavos ala, to command her, Lavo el hamelech, go to the king, lehishanen lo, beg with him, levakesh mofanav, plead with him, alamo, for your nation. And Hasach came and told Esther, and Esther answered back, Kolav de hamelech, ve'amedinos hamelech, yodim, asher kol ish ve'isha, asher yavo el hamelech, el hechotzer hapnimis, asher lo yikare, achas daso lohamis. That's suicide, right? That's like saying, it's so urgent that we talk to the captain of the airplane. Here, grab this black box with the secret information and just run through TSA. There's no time to stop and talk. Yeah, right, they'll shoot him. You don't, like, that's not the fastest way to get the job done and the most effective way. Levad me'esher yoshit lo hamelech ha-shavit ha-zahav v'chaya. Yeah, like, unless they say, okay, fine, we don't mind. It's been 30 days. I haven't been called. So either that means he's not happy with me, which would mean it's not a good time to come. Or it might mean he's starting to miss me, so why not wait till he wants to see me? Okay. I just, today, Elisheva did a play, right? And they had this line. First I have a wife who won't come when she's called. Now I have a wife who comes when she isn't called. Right? Like he's sensitive to this topic, apparently. Okay. And they told Mordechai what Esther said. Vayomer Mordechai lohashiv el Esther. Al tedami v'nafshech. Lehimolet beis hamelech mikol ha-yehudim. Ki im hacharesh tacharishi bo'es hazos. If you stay quiet at this moment, revach v'hatzalel ya'amod le-yehudim mimakom echer. Very interesting. What do you think he's so worried about? She has to speak now to save the Jews. That's not what he said. He says, they'll be saved from somewhere else. Maybe this is the very moment. If this is the very moment, doesn't mean like this tkufa, the situation. This very moment may be the reason you're the queen. Perhaps this is why you are in Malchus. If you miss this moment, it'll be too late. You can't wait. It's true, 11 months until the Gezerah, you can't wait. Why? That's the question. Was she so worried that she's going to die that she's not willing to take a chance for the people? It's not a question. That she said, what would be so bad if she would say, like, let's just wait a little bit. Just wait until she is called to the king. And that will be a more opportune time to say her question, her request. Because it's worse. Now she's going to make him even angrier. Even if it's only a question about it, you shouldn't do it. Because there's enough time to wait. It seems like common sense would actually dictate that she's right. What she said wasn't that she was afraid or selfish or, you know, I don't know, not brave or courageous. It's sensible. Just wait. You'll have a better chance of success. That's not, the question isn't why was she hesitant to go. The question is, what's eating Mordechai? Shenichnas b'safek lavo el ha-melech shelo kadas. He's going to take this huge risk of going into the king against the law. V'lama lo haya mamten eze yomim ad shetia nikres la-melech. Wait a few days, she'll be called in eventually. V'nira lomar, it seems we could say, ki hagoral shahipil haman tzorech shiyye nepach alav lagamre. That it was necessary for the goral that Haman through to reverse itself upon him completely. Ki zehu hatzalas Yisrael. This is the salvation of the Klal Yisrael. Mordechai yoda ze. Mipnei ki hagzera hazos yotzal v'nisan l'kach tzarech shetetzi hagzera atzma v'tia ne'afeches al zera amolik lios ne'arogim. Okay, we're not going to have time to explain. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I would love to finish reading it, but the class is over. So, I'm here, but I know everyone has important jobs to do. So, okay. You know what? Let's skip just a little bit farther down to the next page. Top line. We're in the middle of a sentence. It needs to be Shiyeh Revach V'atzal Elayhudim Lahafoch Hadavar Alhaman Kemosh Nefarish Od Davar Zeh. So we're going to explain further. For some reason, which we don't know, Mordechai understood that the only way to save the Jewish people now was in a reversal. And somehow for the reversal of the V'nahafalchu to work, it has to be at this moment. Ze haya ha-hatzlacha l'gamrei kasher ne'epach alav l'gamrei, ve'lekach ha-taliyah asher choshev Haman al-Mordechai. That's why, for example, the hanging that Haman plotted for Mordechai, gam kein ne'epach alav ve'osa zman l'gamrei, reversed itself and happened to him completely. V'haya Haman itzla, and Haman was hanged, as is said in the verses. Shemizet tira ki kol ha'inyan hazeh hayakach. I'm going to stop here. Next time, we're going to start to explain this idea. But if you think about it, every single outcome in the Megillah is not just a punishment and not just a fortuitous salvation, but it's actually the effort of Haman reversing itself and landing on him. Right? Kacha yeseh l'isha asher hamelech chafetz bikaro. He's the one who said it and it reversed itself on him. He made a tree 50 amos tall and a gallows and it reversed itself on him. Right? He said, get rid of Queen Vashti, and that reversed itself on him. All of a sudden, there's Queen Esther is in there. He doesn't even know that that's like an issue. Okay? Every single thing. He says, let's kill the Jews on the 16th of Adar, and that reverses itself on him. Okay? That whole war also is on the 13th of Adar, but it's not the same result that he was looking for. Okay? Everything in the Megillah had to happen that way, and Mordechai knew that, and he knew that there, for some reason, it has to be now. If you wait, you'll miss it. So next time, Mr. Shem, we'll look into why that's so. Okay? Looking forward. All this so that we could answer, why lightning?
That's what it was for.
Yeah, of course. Really, the sentence was, he said that all the lightning rebounded on him, right? It was sent back on the head of the one who sent it, right? That was what he said.
Yeah, it's so amazing, because if I read that, I would be like, okay, nice metaphor. Like,
How I read it the first time. But then after I was learning the Maharals, I went back to the reverse and I suddenly saw it in a whole new way. I realized the word like, so I wasn't really doing it to answer that.
Whoa, I never take my curiosity that far.
I didn't actually swear because of that, and he doesn't use the mashal of lightning. The Hirsch came with the mashal of lightning, not the Maharaj. Mm-hmm. But it's very perfect. Okay, good Shabbos. Thank you. Oh, first of all, I brought you bagels. Second of all, you want, I'll try to bring you a bagel. I have in my car if you want one. There was a check Daddy left you, the check for the deposit. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did you get it? Oh, okay, good. Oh, it's 4:30.
It's already filled out. I was thinking about it when I came at 4:30, and it's really supposed to be $75, but in your head, it'd be sort of filled out.
Anyway. Oh, I have dirt on my leg also. It was very, a certain amount of mud at the cemetery. Okay, my shoes are, I tried to wash them off before. Giovanna passed away. No idea what happened to her all the time. Right? I was talking about her.
She was.
It turns out that she moved to be nearer to her kids, and then...